From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the governor says he's going to push for new campaign finance reform. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on new developments over hydraulic fracturing in New York and a task force improving the state's electric grid is making progress. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo says he's starting a new effort to push campaign finance reform in New York's elections. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo pledged during his election campaign that he'd work toward reforming the state's campaign finance system, which contains loopholes that permit nearly unlimited amounts of money to be given to candidates. The governor listed public financing of campaigns as a goal in his State of the State message in January, but then he failed to actively pursue the topic. The governor says there was a reason why.
There was not a desire to pass it. That's what happened. The legislature did not want to pass campaign finance reform.
Now that the formal legislative session is over, Cuomo says he will renew his efforts and try to raise awareness with the public. He'll be working with a coalition of groups that includes Facebook founder Chris Hughes and his husband Sean Eldridge, who worked with the governor to coordinate the efforts to pass same-sex marriage in New York. The governor says, like the gay marriage issue, he has to convince the public that campaign finance reform is important first before legislators will agree to it.
The same model here is we have to get the people of the state to demand campaign finance reform, which they are not doing today. And then I think the legislature will follow.
Cuomo says campaign finance reform often scores low as a priority in voter surveys. The governor says he thinks the excessive spending already occurring in the 2012 elections may help his cause.
During this presidential season, which threatens a truly excessive exploitation of the campaign finance laws through various means, Citizens United lawsuit, PACs, etc., lobbying organizations, I think people are really going to get the sense that the system is out of control.
At the same time the governor is speaking out against excessive spending, he's making use of the current laws. The blog State of Politics reports that hours after Cuomo spoke in favor of campaign finance reform in a news conference, he attended a $20,000 a plate fundraiser at the home of his sister and brother-in-law, Maria and Kenneth Cole. And the governor has made use of a legal campaign loophole. He's worked closely with the business-funded Committee to Save New York, a not-for-profit entity that runs TV ads to promote the governor's agenda. The group does not have to publicly disclose its donors. Cuomo says while he does not think the committee should have to reveal who gave the money so far, he is instructing the State Ethics Commission to set up new rules going forward. They will force the not-for-profits, known as 401c4s under the IRS code, to disclose donors.
We are the only state in the nation that will require this disclosure.
Karen Scharf with Citizen Action, who has long advocated for campaign finance reform, welcomes Cuomo's initiative, but she blames Republicans in the Senate for holding the reforms up.
There is a lot of strong legislative support for public funding of elections for campaign finance reform. We had the vast majority of the Assembly committed this year. The Speaker had a bill. Almost every single Senate Democrat was committed. But we do need to move the Senate majority on this issue, and we look forward to doing that through public work and with the governor.
There's speculation that Governor Cuomo could push a public campaign finance bill in a special session later this year and perhaps trade the issue in exchange for granting lawmakers a pay raise. The governor won't commit to a specific timetable right now, though, saying he'll strike when the iron is hot, when the time is right. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. We blast off this week, Alan, with the issue of home rule. Now, this has to do with hydrofracking in the state. You've predicted from day one that Governor Cuomo wants this to happen, and he indicated this week that he's supportive of something called home rule. That is, those communities on the Pennsylvania border that want it should have it.
So let's see. Let's just say people had chocolate-flavored arsenic, you know, in their area, and they could make a lot of money, but they would have to poison their kids. Would it be something that we should allow people to vote on? I don't think so. I think in some cases the state stands up and says, no, this isn't good for you. We do it all the time. We do it with heroin. We do it with other things. And here the governor comes along. Now, one could speculate that he might want the money for the state coffers, that there isn't much going on down there, and that people are hurting, and that this way there'll be more jobs. You know, you got to give him all of that. On the other hand, it's a really bad idea because we really don't know yet whether this can work and whether or not you can safely hydrofrack. There are all kinds of indications that you cannot. And as long as there's a single doubt, it's probably a very bad idea. In any case, along he comes and he says, let's let the people vote on it down there. If they want it, let them do it. Well, okay, let's assume that somebody has a little plot of land. They can sell it to a gas company, and they can make $1 million. And then they can pack up, take their kids with them, and go to Florida or go somewhere else where they don't hydrofrack. And so that leaves everybody else with a situation which may not be all that healthy. I say may not be because we don't really know. And if, in fact, it turns out that it's not going to work and that somebody is going to get benzene in their water supply, then shame on the governor.
Let's stick with the governor for a minute, Alan. The governor pledged this week that during his election campaign, he would work toward reforming the state's campaign finance system, which contains loopholes that permit nearly unlimited amounts of money to be given to candidates. That just, of course, reported by our Karen DeWitt. But you look at the blog from Liz Benjamin this week, who writes on these issues and reporting for YNN. She says, right after he gave this lengthy speech on campaign finance reform that evening, he went down and raised a lot of money for his campaign.
Well, she called him a hypocrite. And, you know, that's tough stuff. However, if on one hand you're talking about how you have to have campaign financing, knowing you're not going to get it, especially since the Senate is controlled by the Republicans, and the Republicans don't like campaign financing because they have extra money. That gives them an extra advantage. Now, ironically, the reason that they're there is because the governor put them there. That's right, the Democratic governor, by not vetoing the Reapportionment Act, which he said he was going to do during his campaign, assured that his friends, Dean Skelos and the Republican Party, would be in power. And as a result of that, those guys are not going along with campaign financing. He knows that. So as he's raking in the money, as his brother-in-law, Kenneth Cole, and others, and his sister Maria, are giving huge parties for immense amounts of money, he says, let's have campaign financing. That's funny.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. A photograph in a hospital newsletter is getting some notice after the challenger in a New York State Senate race was photoshopped out while the incumbent's representative was left in the picture. More from the Legislative Gazette, Pat Bradley.
The photo shows a crowd of people just as a ribbon was cut, celebrating a remodeled urgent care facility. Among those holding scissors in the front row is a representative of incumbent Republican State Senator Patty Ritchie. Just behind her left shoulder stands the Democratic challenger, Oswego County Legislator Amy Tresetter. That picture was published in newspapers and is on Oswego Health's Facebook page. But when the hospital published their newsletter highlighting the ribbon-cutting event, Tris Setter had been digitally removed from the photo.
It does suggest that future photo manipulators, if they really want to get away with it, should eliminate the person's legs from the photo.
Middlebury College Associate Professor of Political Science Bert Johnson says it's a crude, rudimentary manipulation. Tris Setter's legs remain, edges of her body are traceable along the person in front of her, and an attempt to clone a wall to replace her was not color-matched to the surroundings.
With respect to other kinds of photo manipulation, usually it has come up with respect to certain media outlets. There's been a discussion as to whether Time or Newsweek should be altering their cover photos, or whether the New York Times should be altering its photos, or whatever. That kind of thing is more common than this. I don't recall another incident along these lines. It does raise ethical questions, I think. And it's hard to say what the motivation is for the alteration of the photograph. However, one thing political scientists have found is that visibility is very important, especially for a challenger. So the elimination of this candidate from the photograph made her invisible. That's not helping with the visibility issue.
In a report published in the Watertown Daily Times, the newspaper was told by the hospital that Tris Setter was removed because they couldn't identify her for the caption. SUNY Albany Professor of Sociology Dr. Richard Lockman is amazed and says that's not a valid reason to remove someone from a photo.
You know, it's public relations, but if anybody's going to take a public relations product seriously, it should try to meet certain journalistic standards, and this seems one of the most basic, that you don't doctor photos. Then I think the other factor is that it seems pretty obvious that this was done for political reasons. You know, the head of this for-profit hospital is endorsed Republican candidate, and they airbrushed out the Democrat.
Democrat Amy Tris Setter finds the hospital's explanation for cutting her out of the photo odd, but says it's not a big issue.
I don't understand exactly why I wasn't recognized. Apparently, the people putting the newsletter together didn't recognize who I was. I think it's an unfortunate incident. I have received a very sincere apology from the hospital, from Ann Gilpin, who's the CEO of the hospital. I have accepted her apology. She tells me it was an unfortunate mistake. I think that I'm going to take this as a mistake and continue to have faith in the goodness of people.
Oswego Health is not granting interviews and instead emailed this statement. Quote, Oswego Health President and CEO Ancy Gilpin has already apologized to Amy Tris Setter. Oswego Health is taking internal action to ensure this does not occur again. Unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
The task force working on improving New York's electric grid is making progress, as we hear in this report from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
The state's Energy Highway Task Force, Governor Andrew Cuomo's public-private initiative to upgrade and modernize New York's electric power system, is looking at a variety of plans and proposals to improve the transmission and distribution of electricity. Dave Flanagan is a spokesman for the New York Independent System Operator.
The biggest development would be the response to the request for information from the governor's Energy Highway Task Force. And while we are not a member of that task force, we are sort of an independent technical advisor and resource to the task force. Governor Cuomo's Energy Highway Initiative, combined with last year's Power New York law to address the siting of new generation, are clear signals that New York State is focused on building a brighter future for electricity consumers in New York and solving some of these historic congestion points on our transmission grid, which in times of high demand prohibit the ability or limit the ability to get low-cost power from western and upstate New York down to the real load center in New York, which is New York City and Long Island.
Flanagan traces New York's power bottleneck from Utica through Albany and south through the Hudson Valley.
The solutions can include upgrading transmission lines, building new transmission lines, building less expensive generation in closer proximity to the area that needs the power, or employing what we refer to as demand reduction, demand response programs in those areas as well.
Along with the various plans come environmental concerns, jobs, and opportunities to incorporate renewable energy sources such as wind, water, and solar power. Central Hudson's John Masurgian.
So some of these projects would run through the Mid-Hudson Valley area, including one that would go from Leeds down to the Pleasant Valley substation in Dutchess County, New York. And currently there are two 345,000-volt lines that run from Leeds into Pleasant Valley, and one of the projects would be to add a third 345 kV line, which would significantly reduce bottlenecks and allow power to flow more freely from upstate down to the New York City area.
Masurgian notes that by improving the ability to transmit energy to where the power loads are will help increase efficiency, lower costs, and improve the environmental footprint. He says projects which entail building along existing transmission corridors would result in minimal impact to communities.
Which is important because that will help streamline the process and hopefully allow these projects to take place at a quicker pace. But we do need to act now for what might happen in the future.
The time span for transmission upgrades ranges between 10 and 20 years, depending on the location and any potential changes to technology as new developments occur.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Officials in Syracuse are still smarting from a proposed lakefront mega mall to be called Destiny USA falling through, despite giving it a generous tax break. In the aftermath, officials are taking some of that frustration out on new development projects, as we hear in this report from the Innovation Trail's Ryan Delaney.
The developer who came up with the Destiny USA mega mall and tourist attraction dreamt big.
Wonders on a scale never seen before.
As you can hear in this old promotional video.
A scale that will enable visitors to experience more than they could ever imagine. All in one destination.
That destination, right on Syracuse's Inner Harbor, was supposed to be the mall with it all. Glass-enclosed golf courses, helicopter tours, Tuscan villages, and even a marine park.
Grand opening, summer 2004.
It never happened. All the developer did was make the same mall even bigger. But he still got a 30-year break on his property taxes, worth about $600 million because of a loophole in his contract. And now one developer may be hurting the field for the rest. In the weeks since the city learned the destiny it was sold on would not become reality, it's taken a frostier tone toward current development proposals. Take the negotiations over a proposed bookstore and fitness center for Syracuse University. The developer wants a lengthy tax break. Here's Common Counselor Helen Hudson's reaction.
We have developers walk in. You have all of these grandeur ideas, then you should be able to finance this project. We just can't keep exempting all of these entities.
If the proposal is approved, the city would be granting the developer a 30-year property tax break, just its second ever. Another developer had the unfortunate timing of having to sell the city on a $350 million redevelopment of its Inner Harbor, the same land Destiny USA once promised to transform, just days after Destiny USA's loophole was exposed. After multiple hearings, the city did eventually approve the plans, and it looks like the tax break for the bookstore and fitness center will squeak past the council too. Ben Walsh, the city's Deputy Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development, says public backing is still a necessary part of development here.
The fact is that most projects, particularly projects within the city, are financially upside down. In other words, developers cannot charge enough rent to cover the debt service associated with the improvements that they make on their property. And so therefore, but for a public incentive, many of these projects wouldn't happen.
But Michael Wasilenko, an economics professor at Syracuse University, says if a project needs too much government support, it may not be the right project.
If you really have to subsidize something a lot to get it done, is it really economics? And if the private sector wouldn't have done this, should we be poking our nose in there? You know, and should we be subsidizing something to exist for the sake of it existing?
Wassilenko says Syracuse has to choose carefully what projects it subsidizes and for how long. The city's Ben Walsh agrees, saying a city can only do so much to spur growth. As for the projects already granted lengthy tax breaks, Walsh says only time will tell how successful those will be.
That was the Innovation Trail's Ryan Delaney reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. With this week's Legislative Notebook, I'm David Gustina. In the headlines, this year's September 11th anniversary in New York will be the first in which politicians are excluded from speaking at the commemoration ceremony at Ground Zero. Concerns have arisen that political disputes are overtaking the site. Construction for the Memorial Museum slowed as a result of political and financial disagreements. State Senator Adriano Espaillat says he'll run for re-election to his Senate seat. That follows his loss to Charles Rangel in the Democratic primary in the 13th Congressional District. He conceded the race with Rangel on Monday after the Board of Elections conducted a ballot count. Consolidated Edison's largest union is calling on state regulators to end the lockout of thousands of field workers. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Utility Workers Union of America claims the company cannot provide adequate services as required by law with its smaller workforce. There may be an end to the long-running dispute between state canal officials and towns drawing drinking water from a reservoir near Utica. The Observer-Dispatch reports this week that an interim agreement allows the Mohawk Valley Water Authority to increase the amount of water it draws from the Hinckley Reservoir. A University of Vermont biologist says a new invasive species is headed for Lake Champlain through the Champlain Canal system. She tells the Burlington Free Press the spiny water flea could potentially disrupt the lake's food chain on the New York and Vermont side because it would displace native plankton eaten by fish. A new link in the Erie Canalway Trail is being built in western New York. The new trail segment east of Rochester will connect to a segment currently under construction. The new segment will help create a 134-mile uninterrupted trail from Lyons to Buffalo. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1228, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.